and welcome to Dive Deep. My name is Mike Swigert, and this past weekend was a big weekend at CWC. We concluded our year-long Core 52 series by hosting author, pastor, and communicator Mark Moore. Mark shared with us a unique perspective on heaven and was gracious enough to do a Q&A session on the Core 52 series. After the weekend's messages, Mark sat down with Pastor Arlie and Caleb Swartz to take things a little deeper. This is the beginning of a three-part series that covers a wide range of topics from social justice, mental health, to heaven. In this first part, you'll hear Mark share a bit more about his personal upbringing. At the Q&A, Mark shared that he was 12 years old when his parents got divorced. As time went on, Mark had to choose whether to stay with his mother or father. Mark chose to live with his father, sensing that it would help him to grow and maintain his faith. That choice separated him from his brothers and mother. Later in life, Mark would write a paper on the historical reality of the resurrection of Jesus for his mother. These experiences have been incredibly formative for Mark. Listen in as he shares with us today on Dive Deep.
Welcome to a special episode of Dive Deep, where Mark Moore, the author of our Core 52 series, is joining us in studio to discuss the story behind the study. Joining me today is Pastor Arlie. Welcome, Pastor Arlie.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
And Mark Moore. Welcome, Mark.
It's great to be here finally after COVID.
Absolutely. We were so excited to hear from you this weekend and really get to hear your thoughts on the core study and a little bit on heaven. And now we get the opportunity to really go deeper into some of the things that you touched on, and you didn't get the opportunity to go even further. So I'm just curious, you know, you talked a lot about your faith development in your early years on Saturday night. And I think a lot of the audience members were just wondering, where's your family now? And what ended up happening with your brother and your mother? And I mean, after the paper that you presented her with?
Yeah. So immediately after the divorce, they decided that all three of us would live with my dad for 2 months. And then all three of us would live with my mom for 2 months in our house, and then we had to decide who we'd live with. So at 12 years old, I made a decision to stay with my dad. My younger brother stayed with me. My older brother went to live with my mom. And over the years, she went from UC Davis, where she finished her PhD, to Montana, and ultimately out to Seattle. She's been there ever since. And in fact, I'm going out there in 2 weeks to go visit her and her husband and install a quilting table for her. I do a little bit of woodworking on the side. My older brother lives there with my mom, so I'll get to see Scott. He's an artist, runs a art reproduction studio, his own business. My younger brother's in Denver. Later in life, he was always the smart one, like literally. He's been tested twice for his IQ, 168 and 180, which is stupid high.
Mensa.
Yeah, he's Mensa high. So he went and is working on solar energy, renewable energy resources. He ultimately abandoned his faith as well. So of my brothers, I am the only one remotely following Jesus. And my dad has since moved to Sun City, if you've heard of that, as a retirement community in Phoenix. So he and his wife are very near to us. In fact, I'm going to move him into a new place October 15th. So, but the more important question is where it took my children. Because if I look at, I remember one time I was in the back of a van. My brothers and I don't get together very often because we live so far apart, but Scott was up driving the van, and his marriage was pretty tumultuous at the time. And Dave was sitting in the back seat with me, and he's never been married. And I asked him about that, and he said, sure. "I don't think I'll ever get married."
Is Dave the smart one?
Dave's the smart one.
And now there's no correlation. No, that is not a correlation. Come on,
Caleb has an implication that we need to seek counseling for. But I asked him why, and he said this. He pointed to my brother and says, I know I don't want that. And he pointed to me and said, I don't think I could ever have that.
Wow.
So even my pagan family looks at my kids and grandkids as real models. So I had a son and a daughter. My son is a youth pastor out in Atlanta, Georgia, with four kids. Two are biological, two are adopted.
Cool.
My daughter's married to a worship pastor who got hired on our staff. He's killing it on our staff, and they have four biological kids. So one of the coolest things is I really do love the desert. I'll make fun of it. Like, mm-hmm. right. I live in a giant right. kitty litter box, but from my front porch, I look up on the mountain. I see a saguaro cactus about 30 feet high. Mm. It's my favorite saguaro cactus in the world. They see it from the other side from their house. Mm. So there's just something – there's something about following Jesus through the decades. Arlie, we're in this studio is actually where your father lived as yeah. pastor of this
yeah,
church.
Man. So absolutely.
The hey, Davis I'll give, dynasty.
I'll give you a worse story.
Oh, no.
My office is in my parents' old bedroom.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I had hoped I would get out of –
So you don't talk about birthing sermons or anything like that?
No, we totally eliminated that.
No,
it's PC
creepy.
Here.
It's just very creepy.
Now, I'm really curious. How at 12 years old did you have the wisdom to know choosing your father was going to develop your spiritual faith and that was more important?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. My mom actually taught me in Sunday school.
Wow.
So I always considered her abandoning the faith, and I just held on to the faith that she gave me. Mm. My father was the one that taught me tithing and ethics and morality, and so I knew where that was going to come from. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I also saw the direction my mom was going with her life, and I saw that at 12. I was baptized at 9, so early faith commitment – I knew I loved Jesus, and you know, through my life, Caleb, there have been times where the cost of losing my mother and brothers was really high. I looked for ways of walking away from Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But the two things I could never jettison was a belief that God is the creator of the world, and not just the creator, but the kind of creator that wanted to know me,
mm-hmm.
the kind of creator that could embed beauty and love into a world. I knew I couldn't give up on that. And honestly, with Jesus, it was the resurrection, the bodily resurrection of Jesus. I tried to argue my way out of that, and just I never could intellectually deny the reality of the resurrection. And if that is true, it doesn't matter what else you suffer in this world. He is the living Lord and can conquer mankind's only unconquerable enemy, which is death.
Mm-hmm.
I've got nowhere else to go but him.
You know, just hearing you talk about your faith and how early he called you into it and knowing that living in, can I call it a divided household?
Oh, yeah.
Was a challenge early in your faith. What encouragement or words would you share with maybe some of our younger kids or younger listeners or even those that are have been walking in a divided household for a long time? What would you say to somebody that's struggling with that different levels of faith in their family that are pulling them in two different directions?
Boy, that's a great question, Caleb. I would say this, first of all, if your parents are divorced, no matter what your age, it is not your fault. And I wrestle with that because I wanted to take the blame at, I knew it was stupid. Mm-hmm. At 12, I was going to take the blame for my parents' divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had a pastor take me off to the side, and oddly, that pastor got divorced later. But he reminded me, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing you could have done to fix it. So I would say to you out there, your parents are people just like you. Give them the grace that you would want God to give to you. Second thing is, I am even spiritually or in terms of ministry as deeply indebted to my mother as my father. My father taught me about caring for the environment. He taught me about hard work. He taught me the Judeo-Christian ethic. My mother taught me a ravaging protection for the poor, for the least and the lost, for the outsider, the underdog. She's always fought for individual rights for people, and that is so like Jesus, even though she doesn't believe in Jesus. I don't believe that she would believe in the causes she's fighting for had she not got from Jesus a love for lost people and those who are beleaguered because of society. So I guess what I'm trying to say, Caleb, is every member of your family can bring you into closer walk with Jesus, even if they're walking away from him.
Wow. Mm. The implications of that are staggering when you start to think about it.
That's a great thought. That's a great thought, though, as you're kind of working through that. Actually, what you described in your mom, she'd make a great Wesleyan, because John Wesley was, you know, the social justice and all of those kinds of
Absolutely.
Things were so strong, you know. And we as the Wesleyan Church, that's kind of being rediscovered for us. It was kind of lost over a period of time. We separated off the Methodist Church over the slavery because we refused to believe in that. And the Methodist Church refused to take a stand against it. And that was kind of our birthing. And but then, you know, there was a lot of kind of social justice things that were lost, and it's just being rediscovered.
Yeah, and you know, the powerful thing about that, Arlie, is that if you look, there's a wonderful book called The Rise of Early Christianity by Rodney Stark. And he traces, as an agnostic, he traces how the church has such explosive growth. Mostly social justice things. You know, we're in a pandemic now. It was Christians that stayed in the city when everyone else fled, especially the physicians and the elite, and they cared for people. And many of them died, but more of them, they saved more lives than they lost in the process. Mm-hmm. You look at the anti-slavery movement. The Wesleyans were a key part of that. If you look at, I think Wesleyans were also part of prison reform.
Yep.
And the fact that we call them penitentiaries is because we believe that people can repent and show penance rather than punishment.
How about that? Yeah.
And so there's – if you look at the forefront of any social justice movement, there was – I cannot think of an exception to this. There was a Christian historically in the background of it.
I enjoyed when you were speaking on Saturday night about – all of those things where the church has been a part of social, you know, aspects. And I know in grad school we talked about the fact that the one unfortunate part is when the church dropped the ball in those areas, the world had to pick it up. And unfortunately, it went in a different direction than where the original intent. Women's movement, you know, caring for the poor, you know, ended up into welfare. You know, all those kinds of aspects. So
yeah, the church is, and I think that the reason the church is the only institution capable of doing it is because we are beholden to one Lord, one Savior, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. To do social justice well, we have to have an eye on two things. That number one, Jesus is Lord. Because when other people begin to lord it over, you have a situation, well, like Haiti is a classic example. Mm-hmm. We keep throwing money at it. Yeah. We could have bought the country five times over.
Right.
Of course, we'd have to believe in slavery at that point, so that's a problem. But you understand the book When Helping Hurts. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the Lord, then you don't know how to help people.
Right.
And the other thing that you really have to understand is it's like when Jesus did miracles, he didn't do miracles merely out of compassion. They were prophecies of what would happen. So the woman who had a 12 years gynecological problem, and then the little girl who's 12 years old, clearly the 12 is connecting the two stories. Why would you tell a story about a bleeding woman and a dead girl? Mm-hmm. Where else in the gospel do blood and death come together?
Mm-hmm.
So it's pointing to something bigger than the event. So social justice without pointing to something bigger, to the eternal, will ultimately devolve into I hate to say this publicly. It seems like a form of welfare. Seems like a form of enslavement, where I keep you needing me, rather than pointing to something bigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that makes me also think of the topic of significance, which you touched on and spoke in pretty good detail about how that's one of the main drives for us as people. And it's sounding to me like, you know, especially with significance in how we serve, without that focal point on Christ, it's never as significant.
Yeah. So, Caleb, let me, if you don't mind, I'll just give you a little, because you're a young guy. Let me just coach you on something that I've noticed with other young millennials. So often when we try to get significance, we try to go up to a boss, a coach, a political figure. Significance going up is so hard to gain. You have to work so hard at it. And as soon as you get it, you become a target of all your peers. And it's so easy to lose because all your peers are going after you now. But significance that points down, Boys and Girls Club, after-school programs, mentoring programs, there are 50 guys that I – when I was a college professor, I took 5 guys a year. In the very first group, you might have recognized his name, Kyle Adaman. And I don't think I've shared this publicly, so I apologize if I'm revealing something that he wants to keep secret. I don't think so, because he's talked about it publicly. Mm-hmm. He was in that mentoring group. Mm. I have 50 of those guys who have signed a wooden board that's in my office. If my house burns down, that's the first thing I take.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because all those guys, they're better than me at ministry. Wow. But they still look up to me as mentor. When you show significance through serving, it's easy to get and it lasts for a really long time.
It has been great to have you with us for part one of this special edition with guest speaker, teacher, and author Mark Moore. In part two, you're going to hear the conversation move towards our search for significance and mental health. You don't want to miss it. And keep an eye out for updated content in the coming few weeks, more content from our midweek devotionals, and if you don't have access to Right Now Media, it's as easy as a text message. Just text Right Now CWC Milton to 41411. That's Right Now space CWC Milton to 41411. We'd love to resource you there also with additional content for your growth in relationship with Christ and others. See you for part two.